We Like Dota is brought to you by the generous support of our patrons. Patrons like Ye Olde Raven, Ninja Skelts, Samson Magnuson, RX Cowbell, Surreal, CBX, Beandob, Monster, Icebug, Spenguin, Titus Andromedon, Dank, Zynason, Dolly Cow Chef, Paul Turner, Jeff Peterson, Digital Nick, Edge, Javier Lato Play, and Wisp. If you would like to become one of our patrons, head over to welikedota.com and follow the links to the Patreon. We Like Dota episode 264 starts now.
Hello and welcome to We Like Dota, the internet's casual Dota 2 podcast. I am Sam, the Plaid Pirate. I have here with me a full house. Boop, 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 boop. We've got Jim. Hello, Jim.
Hello, Sam. Hello, internet.
We've got Arian.
Hello. What's up? It's me.
And you already know our last guest host from the intro.
Charlene. I think due to the magic of audio editing, that'll be a perfect pancake.
Maybe.
But it wasn't perfect, guys. I have a confession.
First try.
Yeah.
Yep. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
One take.
That was perfect take.
Oh, thanks, guys. Thanks.
Yeah. Perfect take. We tried to record yesterday, but then we had some time zone issues.
Yeah, my bad. Then... it's actually kind of a scourge. Like, I have all the time zone timings, like, in my head perfectly. And then for 2 weeks a year, because you're not on summer on winter time yet, it's just all wrong, and I forget every time.
I had some, home improvements, improvements that I had to attend to yesterday, but don't worry, my entire bathroom is now tiled. It feels great.
Well, in a way it was good that I choked yesterday, because now we're four people instead of three.
That's right. All right, well, let's get into the Dota feelings. Jim, how was your week in Dota? How did it make you feel?
It was good. It made me feel okay. There were highs and lows. I played a couple games on Thursday night with some guys from our team, Titus Andromedon, Greg Sure. I think we ran into some high behavior score issues.
What does that mean?
What does it mean?
Yeah, so, like, we're all 10k behavior score. All
right, nice, right? Nice flex, dude.
Yeah, well, it's... Yeah, not anymore.
Aww.
Yeah. But we ended up with a bunch of really new players, which is cool, because I guess it's not a dead game.
Supposedly.
But people were... Yeah, but people were like, this is the first game I've ever played. This is my third game.
Ooh.
And, like, the one group we played with... They were really awful, and they were yelling at us. And so we muted them and then reported them afterwards. Well, like, how do you start a new game and then flame people? But the next one, we're like, hey, we're new. We don't really know what we're doing. And the other team had, like, a totally legit lineup, like, full meta. And so I said, okay, we're probably going to get wrecked, but it's no big deal. If you have any questions, let us know, because we're like Dota.
So nice, Jim.
Yeah, and then at, like, yeah, whoever I am. And then at, like, 9 minutes, you just... They just disconnected and abandoned the game. And
what?
Like, oh, cool. Okay.
What a bunch of
I know. Like,
toxic. Your podcast behavior score just went down, Charlene.
Ooh. How much did I lose?
A lot, actually. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I think is like at least 500 off your
probably.
Behavior MMR.
That's pretty toxic. It's like saying in the podcast. I'm gonna blurb this so it's funny.
Keep you're gonna going. Start bleeping yourself?
Yeah.
You should bleep so it's really long And it sounds like she said something horrible.
Nice.
Wait, are we all gonna like keep bleeping the that we keep saying afterwards though?
Yes. Maybe. I don't know.
We'll see. It might be a mystery for our listeners.
SP for short.
just to put a taste out there for people. Yeah.
All right. So you had some bunch of quitters, really, is what you had.
Yeah, that's what it ended up being. It was just quitters. And then last night I got this new idea.
Oh God, that never ends well.
Innovator, so, entrepreneur. Let's go.
I am. Yeah. I mean, we like to know it is generally ahead of the meta.
True.
And so I thought of playing Venomancer offlane.
Yo, I thought of that like 2 weeks ago.
Cool. I'm glad you're on board.
Yeah.
And like, I just think you could play it where you win your lane because you're Venomancer, right? You just max Poison Sting and Gale. And then you just like claim that area. And it's like, if the other team comes in, they will have to expend too many resources to kill you.
Yeah.
Okay. So you kind of play it like techies. So we were playing, it was like me, Gothir, Monster, a couple people last night. And I started to do it when I was up against a Void in lane and he couldn't time walk off all the dots. So it was getting to the point where he couldn't lane against me.
Oh yeah, dot is good against Void. That makes sense.
Yeah. And then the storm zipped in and killed two people.
Ha, my boy.
With and on your a friendly storm or a bad guy?
No, a very, very unfriendly storm.
Aww.
And then he zipped around and killed 40 more people.
Oh, no.
Wait, one zip?
Whoa.
Yeah, it was impressive.
one zip.
He just kept respawning.
Yeah, only I
zero.
Can do that, so.
Yeah, he was, we're pretty sure he was a Smurf. Got there, looked up his account, and he had 500 games in China at a 50% win rate. And then when he moved to US East, it was like 15 game win streaks with TA. And a 42-2 game on Storm as Crusader 3 or whatever it was.
I don't know if that's a Smurf, Jim. People just
sounds
move.
Sounds like a bot account.
Maybe he's a good player, and then sometimes he's just lucky, so he gets like 40 kills in a game as it goes. And then he just decided to move.
He had none of those before he moved, but yeah. It could be just like any Dota is bad.
That's what I was going to say.
That's
China
true.
Is just... China's just so much better at Dota.
I mean, it's a common known fact that like EU Herald is like NA Divine. So
right.
It could be.
So I think my Venomancer offlane experiment, it doesn't tell us anything about it because it seemed like it was going pretty well until my entire team died over and
I
over
I think
again.
It can work. You just have to have a like Elder Titan or a Spirit Breaker or something as a support so like people just don't TP away from you. But I definitely think it's interesting.
We had Earthshaker. X2 was playing Earthshaker.
Ah, very cool.
And the two of us were doing quite well until we all died. But it was fun. And I'm excited to try it again in like a month once all my business trips are over and I can actually play Dota again.
Very cool.
Very good. All right. Charlene, how about you?
Oh, boy.
Oh, God.
My Dota feelings are pretty okay. Highs and lows. What I was going to talk about is that Coach finally put me in. A2K decided
I did it.
To... Uh-huh. Yeah, you did it. I was on the GGS roster in the lower bracket match against Average Joes.
Who did you replace?
Nick. Uranium Heart. Scallion Heart.
He's a busy boy.
Yeah, he was dog sitting.
He was house sitting. I was going to ask about that.
There was a dog.
Yeah, I'm sure there was a dog as well, but can one of you Americans please explain to me the concept of house sitting? It's very foreign to me.
I'm not answering.
Why would you sit somebody's house? The house is not going anywhere.
Well, if there's a dog involved, it makes sense.
Nah, but he has like house sat. I'm not sure if you say it like that. He has house sat houses without dogs before.
Then it's dog sitting. What?
Without a dog.
Without. Okay.
But, I mean, just explain house sitting to me.
Sometimes people want you to water their plants.
I guess.
Yeah.
But water do you have to stay in the house to water the plants?
You, like, get their mail. I don't know.
I'm intrigued by this idea that Nick does it a lot. Like, he's good at it. That's what I want to know.
No, I think like, he just did it like twice in the
world. Experienced house sitter.
I'm not sure. Maybe he does it. I have to ask Nick. It's just such a weird concept to me. Like, hey, can you watch my house?
I know in like winter time, you want to maybe occasionally run the water, because if the water sits in the pipes and you have like a cold spell, it might freeze.
All right, but if Nick is watching somebody else's house, who's watching Nick's house?
It's only you just pop over, do whatever chores they want you to do, and then you go back.
Okay, maybe it works like that. I'll have to investigate a bit more, I think.
Okay. I don't know, bud.
Nice tangent. Let's go.
Anyways, the first game was hilarious because Bea drafted, and he told me on the DL. He told me on the DL. He's like, Charlene, I'm gonna draft you for Luna, but don't tell anyone. It's like, okay, Bea. And it's funny because like the night before I had played a game and I was like, oh man, I'm seeing all this support Luna. I want to see what the hype is about. And I picked it up and I got wrecked. And I was like, okay, Bea, but just so you know, I played one game and it was really, really bad. He's like, no, I believe. And I was like, okay. And I guess the reason he told me to keep it on the DL is because he told no one else on the team about it, because when he picked it up, everyone, Ursi, Arian, were like, what? Bea, what are you doing? He's like, oh, guys, trust me, it's okay.
Secret drafting, that's good.
Yeah, it ended up being fine. They had an entirely melee core draft, so their carry was Monkey King, support Ogre, support Spiritbreaker, off lane Underlord. Who was their mid, Arian?
Alchemist.
Do you remember? Mid Alchemist.
Yeah, that was the thing that gave us trouble.
Yeah, so it was entirely melee cores, like four of them strength heroes. So it was kind of scary, but then we laned well. And Alchemist did get big though, because we didn't pressure him at all, and we were eventually able to like bait out some buybacks and kill him during buyback. So then game one was good.
Yeah. So about that game, I feel like
yes,
I was on board with the four Luna, but Bear had last pick.
Oh yeah, last pick Disruptor.
The guy drafted an Alchemist, so we're like, all right, you can't pick Disruptor here anymore. And he's like, nah, it's good. For so he mid? Just picked it anyway. Yeah, for mid. So basically counterpicked himself. And he missed like most of his idle timings. And Alchemist got a free lane and took his tower at like minute 7. And we still won that game just because we dominated the side lanes incredibly hard. Like me and Charlene got like 3 kills on the Monkey King in lane.
You guys owned.
Yeah, we were like dancing on razor's edge basically, because if like one or two small things go wrong in that game against the Alchemist, that can like put us on a very, very hard track to try to deal with the Alchemist. But we won in the end, but it was definitely, it could have gone very wrong if Alchemist like got lucky 2 times or something like that.
Yep.
What about the next game?
Oh, next game. Next game, I got to play my Venge. So good comfort hero. They had a Bristleback, but then we counterpicked with a Viper as our last pick.
Yeah.
Ursi was drafting this game. And second game, Ursi's, I think, went a lot smoother. Yeah. Shout out to Ursi.
Well, I think both games went smooth. It was just that game 2 was kind of a stomp, I feel like, and game 1 wasn't a stomp technically.
I'm nervous about this next matchup though, and I'm wondering if you're gonna put me in.
I'm not sure. I'm having a hard time as a captain and as a Dota player right now. I guess we'll like segue this into my Dota feelings as well.
Oh yeah, Arian, what are your Dota feelings?
As a player, I think right now I'm struggling to find my identity. If we're going on the deep end this episode, I guess. So It's hard because I was like just, I was a mid player. I played mid, but because I like playing with Bear so much and I decided to like let him have mid, I guess I'm not a mid player anymore. So I thought I'm an offlaner, but like a lot of times in the offlane, I just feel awkward right now. So I don't want to play safe lane because safe lane isn't fun right now. Yeah, it's hard to put into words. I just, like, I'm struggling to find my niche again in this game of Dota 2, which I'm sure I'll find at some point, but it's like a weird transitionary period, I guess. I guess I'm in Dota puberty.
Dota puberty?
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. So boys growing up?
Yeah. I don't know. It's hard to put into words, as I said, but that's like the not knowing what to do as a player, but then also like, as we're going to touch on, our teams, like, I think we're getting back at it, but like 2 weeks ago and stuff, like we were struggling, not only play-wise, but also mentally, which is fine because like none of us is toxic and we all like are friends in real life as well and stuff. So it's not like we'll damage our relationship or something, but just like in game, like we definitely had a hard time on a communication level and on the play level. And it's hard to like find a thing to do as a captain where you're like, hey, I can fix this team. Yeah, that's my rant about GGS. But I think we're over the hill. Do you say that in America? We say it in Germany. Mm-hmm. It's like it's getting easier from now. Thing. Like we got we over the hardest over the part. Hump. Yeah, over the hump.
Over
I guess.
The hump.
We got over the hardest part, and now it's getting better.
Over the hill means like you're like washed up.
No,
like
I mean old, I guess that also applies to me personally. I'm washed up as well. So I guess I'm over the hill in two senses.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. Are there any heroes or anything that you're enjoying right now?
Earthshaker. I think it's just the natural thing to do. When you like don't know what to do, you kind of go back to like your most basic stuff. So right now I'm like playing Earthshaker and Underlord and Darkseer. So like, because I don't know what I want to actually do, I'm just going back to my roots right now because that like is what feels safe as a Dota player right now.
That's but good.
I'm open for experimenting. It's just hard, man. Dota's a hard game.
It is.
Do you still like it at least?
Yeah, I'm still enjoying it.
Okay, good. Otherwise, we'd have to kick you off the hosting panel.
Yeah, if you didn't like
it. Oh, God, yeah. I mean, I'm still enjoying it very much. It's not like you when you had your like little hiatus and were like, I'm not sure if I want to play Dota again. So it's more
calling her out.
I don't think that's not a call out. It's perfectly natural.
No, it was facts.
Yeah, yeah. So I know that I want to play Dota, but I don't know how I want to play Dota. I know this is what I want to do, but I don't know how right now, at least. But maybe I'll figure it out next week and I can come back with some better results.
Okay.
What a round.
We played two games last night.
Yeah, yeah.
Together. Because I really wanted to play Monkey King because I'm fascinated by the hero.
Yeah,
now,
yeah. Monkey King Spammer.
Monkey King Spammer, yeah. The first game was not good.
Yeah,
you
went mid, right?
Yeah, I went Monkey King mid, and you went safe lane Legion?
Something like that. Oh, God.
It was tough. You were like not having fun from minute one. You were laning with a Skywrath, but I don't think the Skywrath was doing support things.
Not really. No.
It sounded like he was just kind of tilting you, and he didn't buy like a single ward the entire game,
which is really bad when you're Legion commander and you like don't know where you can go and get dual damage and stuff.
Well, it's just bad when it's like, yeah, I'm a position 5.
Yeah, and then you're not doing anything. Yeah, I definitely feel like the reason I like started out as a mid player is because I don't have to rely on the other, like, because I played solos. The reason I started playing mid is because I didn't have to rely on other people in my team, in lane at least. Mm-hmm. And that Sky of Mage reminded me of why I became a mid player, because he like didn't use his abilities, but still like sapped my XP and then like refused to do his like use his spells. And it's the same as playing Pudge. Like, the reason you play Legion is because you want to snowball and get those stacks. Same with Pudge. And if you can't get that early, it's really frustrating.
Mm.
Because at least for me personally, I always end up thinking like 5 minutes later, I think about, oh my god, this game would be so much better right now if I didn't like die on them being 100 HP 5 minutes ago or something. It's mm-hmm. because you want to stay ahead of mm-hmm. the curve. And if you're below the curve, you just like see your potential like going higher and higher, but you're not actually there.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was playing mid against the Quas Wex Invoker, which didn't go well for me at all. Whoops. But I don't know. I still had fun that game, even though I didn't like have any impact on the game. I essentially like got bodied out of lane and then wasn't really able to make too much of a recovery. But the second game, I played Monkey King again, but this time in the safe lane.
Mm.
And I had a really infuriating lane support as well. I had a Lich who, anytime he encountered a wave, he would just walk up to the wave and start right-clicking. He would just start right-clicking the wave. So, like, I only have this... Like, I'm not good at Dota, obviously, but my one piece of advice to any support is... Just don't do that. Because then I had to, like, not only did I have to, I mean, last hitting is already hard for me, and then I have this Lich who's just constantly auto-attacking. I'm like, okay, time it so the rain, all right, rain creep's going to hit it, then the Lich is going to hit it. All right, here we go. Luckily, it was a really easy lane because for some reason they decided to, like, try lane.
Yeah, that was really weird.
And so there was just a lonely Weaver in the off lane, so I pretty much had a free lane. I should say that we were playing with Allie as well. Yeah. She was playing.
Shout out to Allie on the Sand King.
Sand King, and she had a pretty bad lane because she got tri-laned. But and you were playing mid Ember.
Yeah.
And I just have to say, it's not very often I get to say this, but I carried that game.
Nice.
True.
Yeah, absolutely.
I did it. I went like 23-10. I really like Monkey King.
Bold gamer.
We'll talk about him later in the episode, but he's just really fun, and he's one of the few carries that his ultimate is just kind of unlike anything else in the game. And it's kind of rare for a carry to have this like big like AoE ultimate ability. It's like sort of like the only thing I can think of that's similar is like Juggernaut, maybe, where you just have this big R button that you can drop. I'm messing around with a couple different builds for him, but so far it's been really fun. I really like playing him. So let's move on to the news.
To read the future, I need entrails!
Aaron, you're going to carry us because we want to talk about your ESL 1 Hamburg experience.
I'm back! I don't know if anybody noticed. I'm actually back from Hamburg, guys. Ask me some questions. Where do you want to start?
Was the food better or worse?
Worse. From last year? Definitely worse. God, I don't want to get into this. I'm going to sound so entitled. So last year they literally had a barista in the press room, just like who make anything you want for you. And that guy wasn't there this year. So it was still good because like you had coffee and stuff, but It's technically a downgrade, I guess.
You couldn't get the lattes just
how yeah, you exactly. That was, how can I work like that? Literally, like, oh, God. Nah. Food was worse, but not by a huge margin. And honestly, like, I'm not there for the food.
Do you think that the money they took away from paying the barista went into other production improvements?
I don't know.
that's a no.
I know, I'm just conflict. I'll just say it. So, like, in the finals, you know how they, in the arena, they have the displays up? And there was this, like, they had the heroes were completely wrong. So, like, I don't know, KP was playing Chen, but he was on Legion. No, KP was playing Legion, but he was on Chen in the arena display. And, like, all the heroes for TNC were wrong. So maybe they didn't cause that. The event was still run very, very well. Content-wise, I'd say I definitely don't have as much content as I did last year. But I think the content that I do have is of much higher quality. Of course, my opinion doesn't really matter on this. I hope the guys, you guys actually will consume that content, agree with me on that part. I didn't get any solo interviews, sadly. Not with Peter and not with Insania. Because
Peter.
Yeah, Nip didn't take any interviews.
What about Nico Baby? Oh, did you get Nico Baby?
Yeah, so Alliance. I really like that about Nico Baby. Actually, it was very on brand. So like in the press room during the press briefing stuff, where like one team comes in. Everybody was doing interviews, and Nico Baby just, like, said, nah, I'm not doing this. And he just, like, chilled on his phone.
Nice.
That's pretty on brand, so I like that. And Nip just, like, didn't take any interviews on anybody. I think they were pretty tilted from their early finish. And then Alliance, I don't know, things just didn't work out. What can I say?
How did you feel doing the interviews this year as compared to last year?
Well, day one was a bit rusty-ish because I only slept 2 hours that night.
Whoops.
Whoops, yeah. But day two and day three, I felt much more confident. It's always nice to see because, like, how much I improve over an event. Mm-hmm. And I kind of started from zero again, just because the format was so drastically different.
Mm.
Yeah.
So what were the interviews? You said there was no solo interviews.
No solo interviews. So what I did is I had 3 hard questions. So I always did it with 2 players. So I gave them 3 hard questions and 3 easy questions. And to decide who gets which questions, I played 2 mini games with them. So they had to play, I played this with you one time, I think. They had to play, what's it called?
Oh, Price is Right.
Yeah, Price is Right with items.
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
so they had to play that. And then also I took a theme from DotaTheme.com and they had to name heroes who they think fit on that theme. And the first who couldn't name a hero anymore or named the wrong hero was out. And those were the 2 mini games. And nice. Whoever wins both, or if they tie, they had to do rock, paper, scissors, which was very hype, gets the easy questions and the other one gets the hard questions. And then just like from these questions, I try to get the conversation flowing so it's just not like Q&A. And
yeah, right.
I also think the like asymmetrical nature of the format, so like one guy gets radically different questions than the other guy, I think that kind of made the flow of the conversation more interesting than just like 3 questions for each guy. And the mini games were fun and got the players in a good mood. So yeah, that's pretty much it. I tried to like make the content a bit more WLD by using hats before strats and the DotaTheme.com website.
Who is the funniest?
I think TNC. TNC was really good. TNC was funny. TNC and after that probably Liquid. Also, just like to say how we're going to publish this content. It's going to be as like as a audio format at the end of each episode, starting with this episode. And I'm also going to make a, because I also recorded video, I'm going to make a video cut, which is going to go up on the WLD YouTube every week.
Oh, hype, video.
Yeah, so if you want to watch some video content, you can go youtube.com/welikedota.
Teaser for your documentary.
Maybe. Oh, also, you know this, like, reach thingy? It's really complicated. So it's, like, the thing, like, this in-house leak thing that Dota Buff launched, and then, like, ESL is going to do some tier 2 Dota shenanigans with that. I interviewed the guy who, like, made that-ish. So that interview is going to be the first interview, and that's going to be on the WLD YouTube as soon as this episode goes out and at the end of this episode as audio. Yeah. That's pretty much it.
That's awesome. I'm excited about that. Cool.
Yeah, it should be great. Looking forward to it.
Thank you again to our patrons.
Yeah, thank you to the patrons for funding the trip. Very cool. This content is 100% brought to you by the patrons.
Yeah. Let's talk about the fast queue. Who wants to introduce this?
Fast queue? Oh, it's so cool. Who wants to introduce this? I want
to. I still don't understand.
All right, I'll do it, I guess.
Same.
Yikes. All right, let me drink something here.
Let us sit at your feet, teacher.
Harry and I were queuing this morning before recording, and he's like, what do you want to do, ranked, unranked? And I was like, let's do ranked. He's like, okay, you want to do fast queue? And I was like, I still don't understand what it is. And he flamed me. He's like, all you have to do is read the patch notes.
Yeah, just read, Johnny. All right, fast queue.
It's only like 8 paragraphs. Yeah, go ahead.
Basically, now there's like, there's basically, we used to have low priority and normal priority, but now we also have fast queue, which is high priority. So we have 3 priority tiers now. But the difference is that people from the 2 higher priority thingies can get matched with each other. So it's not like a separate pool, like low priority is. And you can earn like fast queue games by queuing with all roles selected. And then you do that, you play the game, whatever you get, and you get a fast queue game. And then what happens is you can queue just like mid or safe lane and mid, and you can queue it in fast queue mode, which will put you ahead of everybody who queued those roles in the normal mode. So even though you're doing fast queue, you're still going to have longer wait times as a core queuer than you're going to have as a support queuer. But what's also weird-ish is that if you queue all 5 roles, you earn fast queue games, but because you queued all 5 roles, you're also automatically in fast queue.
Value.
Yeah. That's fast queue, basically. I think it can be good.
Is it actually fast, though?
Yeah. I think it was faster-ish, right? It wasn't, like, super slow.
Like, barely. I don't know. I mean, we queued for, like, 5 minutes.
Yeah, but we're on the second day, so people have to earn fast queue games. And I think the fast queue pool will grow bigger. Because nobody actually, like, earned fast queue games.
That's
yet,
probably
I guess.
True, yeah.
The only issue I have with this is, I think it will adversely affect game quality for a while, but after that it's going to be really good. Because what's going to happen right now is that people will just like, because when you're queuing all roles, you're almost always going to get support because nobody like plays support. So people who just want to earn fast queue games for their core games and they get matched as support, they're going to be really bad support players because they really don't care. And because it's a separate MMR, they actually also don't care about losing. Or, I mean, I'm sure they're not like going to run down mid, but they won't try as hard. And they're also bad on support because they're a core player. So we'll have to get some time so the players will, like the guys who can't play support, so that their support MMR goes down. So hopefully you get, if you get matched with support play, with core players, but they're playing support in your game, they're higher MMR than you on their core. Yeah, the matchmaking is really complicated.
Yeah, yeah.
Jesus.
Did that explain it for you, Charlene?
I hope so.
What was that, Sam?
Did that explain it for you?
I guess. I don't know.
What questions do you have?
Were the queues so bad that this was needed?
Only Gaiman knows.
Say, what did you say?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the idea was that, like, you were getting like huge variance in MMR.
Yeah,
like
at the queue extreme times were super long.
So, like, people were queuing core, and then they'd end up with supports who were, like, two badges below them, or, like, 1,000 people below them, which is a big deal if you're up in Immortal.
Yeah.
And so this is to, it's like another way essentially to encourage people to play support. Although, as Arian points out, like, you're going to end up with a bunch of people who don't know how to play support.
Yeah, but only at the start.
Playing support to get their things. Yeah.
That's going to like adjust as time goes on. And I think people don't actually realize how severe at high MMRs those like discrepancies were. Because you're thinking like, oh, if a rank 100 guy gets queued with a divine 5, you're like, it's not that far behind. But actually, if you think about it, Divine 5 is 4,500 MMR. And the Immortal bracket goes from 4,500 to like 9K. So that guy is almost double his MMR. So like that, and also like even me as an ancient player, I got like pretty long queue times.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Wait, does this mean that they take out the thing where if you're partied and someone is in the divine or immortal bracket, do they still take that into account?
I think so. They didn't say anything about removing that, so I'm assuming it's still in place.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's still there.
I don't know. To me, it just seems unnecessary.
Well, you're a support player
you play support. You automatically have fast queue.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
It's, I think, because, like, people give Valve so much shit for this. But if we're being honest, this is not in Valve. It's just a fact that not enough people play support. Not the, like, ideally 40% of people are support players and they queue support, but that's just not the case. So Valve have to find a way to somehow create good games for people who play core, but also basically force people to play support to create good games for people who play core. And it's a no-brainer that these people have to have core players. And I think this fast queue thing is a good approach because it basically says, okay, I can earn my core games. Before, like, the only way to... Because if you queued all 5, you didn't know. You're probably going to get support. And you never... it's hard to explain. Give me a second. Before, if you want to... Even if you were okay with playing support 30% of the time and playing core 70% of the time, if you do that, you either just queue core and your queue time is going to be insane, or you queue all 5 and you're going to play support 90% of the time. But now people can basically get motivated to play support because they have guaranteed fast core games. I hope that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it makes more sense now.
So I think it's a creative solution.
Very good. Let's move on to my new favorite hero, Monkey King.
The man, the myth, the legend.
Yay.
You're tougher than Axe thought. Come along.
Feeding time.
Have a cookie.
Meepo. More Meepo.
I love you guys. I love you guys.
Who wants to take us through his abilities?
All right, I can do his things.
Very cool.
Wonderful.
So, Monkey King, aka Sun Wukong, is a edgy melee hero who has a creepy face because I don't like monkeys.
Wait, you don't like monkeys?
I don't like monkeys.
Oh, hold on. Why don't you like monkeys?
Because they're too human-like.
I guess.
It's like the uncanny valley.
I mean, I don't really like people, so monkeys are...
Yeah. You do work with flies, right? Like as far from people as possible.
Now I just work with proteins. So like random solutions, clear solutions.
Oven proteins.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just random.
Easy oven protein. Oh,
easy hams.
Anyways, Monkey King. Q. Boundless Strike. Monkey King enlarges his...
That's pretty suggestive.
Monkey King enlarges his staff slams it against the ground, stunning enemies in a line and damaging them with a critical hit based on his attack. This has True Strike.
I just want to point out with this that Boundless Strike gets like attack modifiers. So like if you have a Mjolnir, it can like proc.
Oh, okay.
Very cool.
If there's a bunch of people in the line and you have a Battle Fury, does each one cleave so the people at the back?
Cleave is the only exception.
Okay.
Cool. Right.
But it also ties into his passive. Like, if you have Jengu Mastery up, that counts.
Boundless Strike has a 1200 cast range. So it's a pretty long, like, linear stun nuke thing that he can do. The crit damage multiplier scales from 150% up to 225% as you level it up, and you can increase that further with a talent. And the stun duration also scales up as you level it up from 0.4 up to 1.6. I think that's everything about it. Yeah.
Very nice.
His W is Tree Dance. This is Monkey's, like, annoying thing, I would say. It allows him to get up into trees, hop around in trees, and then also when he's in a tree, he can use his Primal Spring spell, which is another thing I'll get to afterwards. Let's see, is there anything else I can talk about it? The cooldown of it, I guess, it's kind of like a blink. So if he takes damage, he can't do his tree dance, but that is only when he's tree dancing, like, from the ground up to a tree. If you damage him while he's already in a tree, I think it's fine. He can still jump to another tree. The cool thing is if you break the tree that he is standing on, he gets stunned for 4 seconds because he fell off of his tree. So for that reason, good counters to Monkey King are heroes, who have flying vision because they can spot the monkey hopping around from tree to tree, and B, heroes who can break trees. So
my boy Batrider.
Yeah, Batrider's great.
Love picking that against Monkey King.
Beastmaster's great. Those are probably the two best, but yeah,
Beastmaster can stun him for 8 seconds.
Yeah. Beyond that, anyone who can break trees is also good, because if you have a good idea of where he went, then you can break the trees in that area. So, let's see, Windranger, Timber, Jakiro's Macropyre, Keeper's Ignis Fatis, actually.
It breaks trees? I didn't even know that.
Yeah. Phantom Lancer.
Doppelganger. Okay.
He can land next to the Monkey King. Yeah.
Okay. His E is Primal Spring. The leveling in E is tied to your level in Tree Dance. And Primal Spring is how Monkey King can jump out of his tree. And when he jumps out, it does damage and slow in an AOE, in a 375 AOE. And As he's channeling it, you can, like, there's a sound effect and also a visual thing on the ground for you, not for the enemy. The enemy can hear the sound effect, but they won't know where Monkey King is leaping to. But then he'll jump down, he'll do his little AoE damage, and I think that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
He does not have to channel it the entire time. I think just the channeling helps. It scales the damage that he does upon landing. Okay. Next spell is his Jingu Mastery. It's his passive. This is it every four hits, right?
Yeah.
Every fourth hit, rather. He gains attack bonus damage, and will also lifesteal on that attack. So as Sam mentioned earlier, his Boundless Strike will actually proc off of Jingu Mastery. So if you've hit your four things and you have your Jingu Mastery up, then you'll get that bonus attack damage and you'll lifesteal off of anything that you hit with your Boundless Strike, which is pretty cool. It's like a mini Satanic almost, because sometimes you'll be super low, but if you hit a bunch of units, you'll just gain back all your health and also do a lot of damage, because on top of the Boundless Strike percentile thing, you also get attack bonus damage from Jingu. The buff duration is pretty long, so like this is what you level pretty early on, and it makes you able to harass in lane, because once you hit them four times, you'll have that buff for a while and you can use that extra attack damage to secure your last hits, or if you're getting low, you can lifesteal off of it, etc. Pretty good. Monkeys, he has like another random spell called Mischief, but it's not so random. It has a purpose. Does he just start with this, right? He doesn't have to skill it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a Techie's
Minefield Sign.
Yeah, Techie's Minefield Sign. Monkey just has this ability. Mischief, not called Monkey Business, is his...
So completely unacceptable, but go ahead.
Yeah, missed opportunity. So Mischief is ability to like swap form, I guess. But the useful part of it is that it interrupts, or not interrupts, it can disjoint spells and like maybe move commands or attack orders. I can't remember. It's damage immunity. But is it? Do they break it into like only physical or only magical or something?
Yeah, they keep changing it. It used to be like kind of a little phase shift, so like even like you would avoid stuns, then you would only avoid damage but not stuns, and I think now you still take damage but you still get stunned or something like that.
It's a weird ability. Point two, Mischief fully negates damage. But I think that
So you still get stunned if someone stuns you, but you take damage.
Yes.
No, you don't take damage.
That's it, yep. You do not take damage, you still get affected by anything.
Because I think before it could dodge projectiles, but now you can't, so.
Right. Yeah, you could Monkey Business like Sven stun before, but now.
So I think like very early on, because you already start with this, Mischief will transform you based on like your surroundings. So if you're kind of near trees, you'll turn into a tree. If you're in base, you'll turn into like common items that get dropped on the ground. So I think early on people will try to Mischief into a courier, because couriers have very high base move speed. So you can do that. You can bait out runes, because if you Mischief like on a rune spot, you can look like a rune. I think it also applies to Roche. Like you can Mischief into Aegis or Cheese. But it's all like location based. Kind of cute.
Really? You can Mischief into the Aegis?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's awesome.
I think Mischief is like one of the most underutilized abilities in Dota. People think it's just a meme, but anytime you got gone on, you just like walk into the trees and press mischief, and it's impossible to tell. Because like nobody memorizes like which trees are on the map in Dota and which aren't, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Then Monkey King's ultimate, Wukong's command, is a large circular formation of soldiers that spread out from his position. If he leaves the circle, then it disappears. But while he stays in the circle, all of the soldiers that he summoned will attack as if they were Monkey King. I can't remember which, like, Rapier damage does not apply? It does apply? I can't remember.
Okay, it does.
But there are certain things that don't apply, right?
Yeah.
Okay, Basher doesn't apply. I know there are just certain... Is that it? It's just Basher? Because I think most attack modifiers do.
Yeah, because back in TI 7, supports were literally going, like, they were playing position 4, and they were going phase Basher, and then once Basher was there, they would just cast their ult and, like, win every team fight. So they got rid of just Basher working with Wukong's command. And Abyssal, of course.
They attack, apparently, their attack speed is locked. So the warriors attack every 1.2 seconds. So, like, attack speed buffs don't affect them.
And I think Jingu doesn't apply to them. They just do auto attacks.
Right.
Right.
And the eggs that Monkey King can get is kind of like a mini version of this, where when he gets an egg in some kind of interval, I can't remember what, he actually will spawn two of these soldiers. So it's independent of like a circle area. He just randomly will spawn them, and they'll behave just like the soldiers when he does cast his ulti. They'll just automatically attack things that are there.
I think it's every 12 seconds.
Every three and a half seconds?
Yep.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm looking at the wiki right now.
Oh, okay.
I've played with it, yeah. It's awesome.
I just played with it, and it didn't seem like ever... That seems like a lot. Okay, cool. Also to note with the eggs... The little soldiers that you spawn can attack buildings as long as you're standing within 500 range of them. Mm-hmm. So,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
And also, Bay let me know that if you stand in the right spot, I guess similar to the tower, if you stand in the right spot in the Roche pit and spawn your little soldiers, they will hit Roche, but Roche will not hit them.
Huh.
So...
What, I have a question about the guys. Do they block camps from respawning?
I don't know.
I want to say no.
I think they're not considered units. They're like something in between. I'll have to look that up.
Interesting.
Though. I don't know.
This is so ridiculous. They're hero clones that are considered hidden.
Yeah, like, it's weird.
What does this even mean? It's just gibberish.
Yeah, it's tough. It's definitely tough. I picked a tough hero this week. Yeah. Sorry, everyone.
Like extra abilities, like bizarre eggs. Yeah.
Anyways, talents. I don't know what people usually go for talents, so you'll have to help me out with this team. Level 10 talent is either plus 20 attack speed or plus 300 tree dance vision.
Yeah, that's just like, are you playing position 4 or are you playing position 1 or 2?
Okay.
That's that talent.
In that case, most of these talents seem to be that then. So level 15 is plus Jingu mastery damage, or plus 75 Jingu mastery damage, or plus 600 tree dance cast range.
Yeah, I feel like the tree dance cast range would be really good though, no matter
like,
what.
How it's intended is that when you're going core, you take the... tree dance cast when you go in core you take the damage, and when you're playing support you're taking the range, But even as a core, the range is just so good that most people nowadays take the range, even when they're playing core.
Okay.
Okay, level 20 plus 400 primal spring damage or plus 50% boundless strike crit. Thoughts on that one?
I mean, that's more straightforward. I feel like you just take the damage again.
The crit damage on boundless strike, not the spell damage, you mean? Yeah. Yeah, it looks like at high levels, the boundless strike crit is picked a lot more and has a 5% win rate bonus. 5%
is pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay, and then final 25 is plus 100 Wukong's command ring or plus 100 armor in his Wukong's command. I think I always see the
ring, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the ring is really good, but if you're like super behind and they have like three really, really, really farmed carries, you're gonna take the armor. But most of the time, since people don't want to go on you anyway and you're under the ring, like most of the time people aren't hitting a Monkey King who's in the ring. So the armor is kind of wasted and you still like get like, what, 20 from casting that ability? You still get a lot.
Okay. All right. Sam, hit us with the lore.
The lore! Basically, the Monkey King was imprisoned by the Elder Gods because the Elder Gods were mad at him for being a jerk. And he was essentially underneath a mountain. For 500 years, the mountain pressed down on him, only his head free from the crushing weight of his prison.
So weird.
Yeah. Very weird. And eventually the gods were like, okay, you can come out if you take a human and protect him from demons and dangers and guide him to acquire this relic. And if you like obey the human and help them, then you can go free. This is really boring lore. Well, no, he did it. He did it well. And then,
no, I mean, I've actually seen the movie. There's a movie about that story. It's with Jackie Chan and like some other people. There's definitely a movie about this. It's a really good movie.
Monkey King is a something in Chinese history legend, whatever.
Exactly. It's like one of the first times that like China is seeing as like one unified country in any works, I think.
Yeah. Very good. So basically he does that and then the rest of his lore is just like, okay, now he can go back to being mischievous. So
got him.
What do we think of this guy?
What do you think when you hear Monkey King, Sam?
What do I think when I hear Monkey King? I don't know. He's been fun. It's fun to jump around trees and like get places really fast. Mm-hmm. Like you jump and then usually you have to wait until you can jump again. But sometimes you can jump and then quickly like primal spring down to the next place. And I don't know. It just, when you decide to go on somebody, it makes you feel like they can never get away from you. Which is really fun.
Especially since you built Echo Set. But yeah, I think Monkey King is one of the more interesting heroes in that he's kind of countered by heroes that he counters, in a sense. Because Monkey King is really good against melee heroes who can't do anything else besides like hit people. That's in lane and later in the game. But then again, heroes who are like that, they're probably gonna, if they get you hit you, they're gonna like kill you really fast. And Monkey King has like, what, one base armor? So Monkey King is good against Earthshaker, but then again, when Earthshaker pressures Enchant Totem, he like loses half his HP. We saw that in the WLDL game me and Charlie play. So it's because of that like interaction, I think he's one of the most volatile heroes in Dota, because like he's countered by the heroes that he counters. So you operate on really like narrow timings on Monkey King.
He's also like just generally squishy.
Yeah, he's super squishy. BKB is like the most core of core items on him. Even I build BKB on Monkey King.
What?
I mean, I'm reformed, guys. We've been over this. I buy BKB sometimes. Come on.
All right. Well, let's move on to Noobs Ask Noobs. We got a lot of questions here.
Holy shit! If you want peace, you must prepare for war. If you want war, you must also prepare for war. The lesson is always prepare for war.
First, from our dear friend, Titus Andromedon. What could be done to freshen up the stale position 5 item build of boots, glimmer, force, wards, etc.?
New items with the new patch, which is going to come in 1 month. We've not even talked about this, man. They're really going to keep the patch until the, like, 24th. God.
Yeah, they got to make sure that when everyone shows up to play the game after TI,
everything's the same.
Nothing changes. Yeah, everyone's frustrated. Nothing changes. That's the play. The game they want to show off.
I think they have to change the game somehow to bring back roaming. Because I think, new items would obviously, you know, add in a mix, but I don't foresee them making any, like, early game items that you can get. It would just be, if I have instead of Glimmer, Force, or Aether or something, I can go for another intermediate item, it spices it up for a little bit. But I think what could really help freshen it up is to just change overall style. So maybe bringing back having your offlane just be a single person to open up roaming, maybe opening up jungling somehow.
Bring back the offlane, period. Offlane, like, just every patch, Icefox just murdering the offlane more and more.
Bring back roaming.
I don't know.
Bring back roaming. I miss, and it doesn't really go so much for, like, my level, because nothing really happens at my level, but, like, watching pros roam and, like, try to hunt kills on mid laners is, like, really fun for me as a spectator. I don't know. I think it's really cool. Anyway.
Yeah, I say, who builds Glimmer Force? Midas Ags every game. I'd say freshen it up.
Dream big.
Yeah.
OG Ruby wants us to explain what a VSCO girl
I don't actually
is.
Know this, but I'm not looking forward to the explanation.
I got this.
Right,
I got
go,
this.
Jim. Out of all the people who would know this, who would have imagined that it's Jim?
I had to look up a YouTube video and get educated.
Who would have imagined it would be the guy with 2 daughters in middle school? So I had just read an article on Vox.com, an explainer for what VSCO girls are.
Oh, I'm trying to read it right now.
Yeah, because I'm a middle-aged American guy, and so that's how we learn things. Mm. And then I pick up my kids at school, and on the way home, my daughter's like, "Oh, I want to get some scrunchies."
No.
And then she's like, "But I'm not a VSCO girl."
Wait, what? Weird.
And I'm like, "Oh, I know what that is." And she's like, "How do you know what that is?" Of course. And so it's like this aesthetic for, like, teenage girls and young adult women that is about baggy sweatshirts and scrunchies.
What's a scrunchie?
And it's like a soft fabric thing to hold your hair back in a ponytail rather than, like, a tight thing to hold back your hair. And it arose out of this app called VSCO, which is supposed to be like the anti-Instagram, whereas Instagram, everything is like super glamorized and makeup and this and that. VSCO is supposed to be like just very simple, like oversized sweatshirts and like messy ponytails. Mm. And so this whole thing, like, people started doing that. And then, of course, because culture's culture, people started trying to be like that not glamorous thing. So it became its own, like, aesthetic that people aspire to, and that's what it is. It's like forced casual kind of dress and style for teenagers and young adult women, of which my daughter is loud. She will loudly proclaim that she is not.
That's the first sign, though.
But
Oh God.
First sign of what?
No.
I think in like.
Doth does proclaim too loudly.
Because the heart of the Visco Girl culture is to not care and be carefree or whatever, right? And she's like, oh no, right. I'm not into the image of the Visco Girl, but I like that scrunchie. And, you know, I'm still chill and laid back. Yeah. And wait, is this the same daughter that has the side shave? Ooh, Jim.
Yeah.
Keep an eye on her.
Well, no, it's
Jim's
like,
going to go to sleep tonight, right, and then he's just going to hear the, like, yes. And he's going to know that it's going to
Yeah, I've heard that noise is associated with Visco Girls in some way. But yeah, it's like performative non-performance. Mm.
This Very is like, right? You know how hipsters were more of a guy label, I think? Yeah, I think this is the girl version of that.
True.
That you have real hipsters, and then you have the people who just wanted to adopt the image of a hipster.
Hipster aesthetic.
So it sounds like your daughter might be like at heart a Visco Girl, or turning into one, even though she's not image-wise fully morphed into it.
Yeah, she has certain accoutrements of the Visco Girl. Shout out to our French-Canadian listeners.
All right. Dora wants to know, how often do you hit level 25 by the end of the game?
Hmm. I feel like about every second game for me, just because I throw a lot, so my games go long.
Everybody else? Sure.
That's like one out of every three? That sounds about right.
Jimbo?
Yeah, I'd say like one in four, one in three, something like that. I don't feel like I get there very often.
Yeah, I'm with you, Jim. Especially if I'm playing support, I'd never hit the 25. Greg wants to know two questions. First, what do you put in your favorite omelet?
Cheese.
Favorite.
So much cheese.
Bread.
Yes.
Yep.
Did you say bread, what? Aaron? In an omelet?
What?
Do you know what is omelet means something different? Is this like over the hill?
I take bread and I cut it into like cubes, and then I fry the bread.
So you put croutons in your
basically,
omelet?
Basically, yeah.
Is this French toast? Are you just
I know what an
French
omelet
toast?
Is, Jim. Thank you very much. It's a
so you fry cubed pieces of bread
to make them like really crunchy, and then I put them in my omelet.
I feel like you'd be better off putting in bacon bits or something.
No, that's I don't even have bacon in my house. I don't eat bacon.
But pig is easy oven
protein.
Goddamn
Americans, man!
And you're the only one of us who slaughtered a pig.
Oh, dude, that's I don't slaughter a pig every day. I just do it once. That was a wild
I'm
episode,
Aaron,
by the way.
Yeah, it was.
I like to be open-minded, but this is by far the worst take we've ever had. All
right, try it, dude. Try it.
All right. Yeah. I'll try it.
Green peppers. I put green peppers in.
I like broccoli.
I like mushrooms.
Oh, mushrooms.
Broccoli, I could mess with that.
Yeah, I love mushrooms in general.
Yeah. Onions? Right. Did we mention onions?
We'll allow that.
Yeah, onions.
No,
I'll put onions in.
Yeah,
onions
are
first
good.
To brown them a little bit, and then you put the egg, and then when you're about to flip it, you put in the cheese in the middle. Mm.
All right, Greg, second question is, what was the best Halloween costume you saw? For me, I had a costume party, and the best costume there was somebody dressed up as an Aldi's box.
A what?
An Aldi.
I know Aldi. That German
grocery shirt. Yeah.
Did I ever tell you about how Trader Joe's is actually Aldi?
What?
I think you have.
You don't know this?
Oh, I guess not.
I don't think he's said this on the pod before. He has.
So
in real life,
Aldi is from Germany. So what happened is the guy who like made Aldi big, he died, and his two sons, they divided up all Aldi in Germany into Aldi North and Aldi South. So like one son got Aldi North and the other one got Aldi South. So when Aldi North started expanding in America, they did really well. I don't know why. I don't even like, most Germans don't even like Aldi, but apparently they did really well in America. So the son who made Aldi South, he was like, oh, I want to get a piece of this sweet NA money. But he couldn't become Aldi anymore because Americans, like, they're just going to get confused because of two Aldis. So then he's like, I'll just name the shop Trader Joe's. And yeah, that's that.
Well,
it's actually Aldi. It's just...
I feel like Trader Joe's is just rebranded doing way Aldi. Better than Aldi's.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that fact.
No problem.
And the costume was an Aldi box, essentially.
Very cool.
Because that's like a thing. They don't really give you bags, or you have to buy bags. But the best Halloween costume that I saw online was a person dressed up as the final season of Game of Thrones and just carried around a coffee cup and just wore a trash bag.
Very, very cool.
I saw that, yeah.
I enjoyed that. Jim, how about you?
Actually, honestly, there weren't that... Like, I went trick-or-treating for like 2.5 hours with my kids. And like, yeah, it was very sweet. And the weather held out, but I didn't really see that many costumes. There was one guy, though, who was Inspector Gadget.
Ooh.
And his, like, the hat with the propeller... I don't know if it was the wind or if he had a motor in it, but it was going pretty good. I think that probably got the best reactions from other people who were trick-or-treating. He was like, I couldn't tell if he was a parent or just like
a guy,
a young grown-up who was walking around. Yeah, like a man walking around in a trench coat.
Oh, no.
But at least he had the hat on, so people knew he wasn't a weirdo.
Very cool.
Okay, sure.
But that, I think that was the best I saw, yeah.
Charlene? I'm not a Halloween person, so... Like, our workplace, I maybe, what's that phrase where misery finds something, comfort, something, you surround yourself, something, something? Because, like, my workplace also was not very Halloween-inspired, and just, like, a handful of people dressed up.
Damn.
So if I'm staying true to the letter of the question here, like, the best one I saw was someone dressing up as Kiki from Kiki's Delivery Service, just like wearing a black dress with like a cat in a purse, like fake cat, paper printed cat. But I'm gonna follow Sam's thing here and say that the best internet costume that I saw was Snow White Walker. So like a Snow White where their face is a White Walker. And then a Jon Snow White. So, Jon Snow, but like in a dress. I liked it a lot.
Yeah. I like that. That sounds good.
All right, Arian, bring us home.
So this year I went out with my friends, but we didn't go to a Halloween party. We just like went to a bar. So I didn't see a lot of Halloween costumes this year. But my favorite, like, costume that I've done is I wanted to be the guy from Sesame Street who lives in a trash can.
Wait, so, aren't you cosplaying the thing that you wore for something? Yeah.
Hey, I wore this. You have a picture of me wearing that. So I like, bought a big trash can, and then I, like, made cutouts, and then I just, like, went into the trash can and walked around with like the trash can hat and stuff. So it's pretty good. I liked it.
Nice.
Very nice. All right, let's do one more here because we are going a little bit long.
What's he gonna choose?
I'm gonna choose Baelucht because Charlene, Kido. I think you have some insight into this. Baelucht wants to know, should I go
God
Kido?
No.
So, Charlene, can you first explain to us what Kido is and then provide us your
Kido
insight?
Kido basically means that, well, the name of it comes from the fact that when you properly do this, you then go into what is called ketosis and you metabolize, you metabolize not sugars, basically. As
carbohydrates.
Yeah, as your energy source. So to push your body towards ketosis, the diet itself involves limiting the amount of carbohydrates that you ingest minus fiber. Fiber is the only carbohydrate you are allowed to ingest because your body can't actually digest fiber anyway. But starches, sugars, even sugar alcohol, like all those things are taken out. So like the main factors, like sugar is the easy one for people to think about, obviously candy or cereal, stuff like that. Is X'd from the list, but you also, in theory, if you're like strictly following keto, you can't have too much fruit because fruit is high in natural sugars. You also can't have like too much of certain vegetables because they too will also be they will also have their own sugar. And probably just culturally the hard one for most people to get into is going to be like rice and potatoes, which are starches. And then you also have like wheat type products because when they're processed, they're the like normally wheat will have like the core of it encased in fiber husks, but then when you process it, it's just like releasing all this stuff, and the processed wheat ends up not being very good for you. Mm. So we've been, Bay and I have been doing keto, dirty keto, on and off for about 3 months.
Hello.
Dirty keto means that we do things that make it easier for us. So we still have like we'll have veggies. We won't care too much about like the actual like strict portions of veggies. I'll have a lot of fruit still. We really just count, like, if there's anything packaged, then we'll like look at the carbs on the nutrition facts there, and then like, oh, okay, this thing has this many this much sugar per this serving, so like we'll limit that.
Dirty keto.
Yeah, dirty keto.
Is there even a point to keto if you're not doing
well,
it properly?
Well, I was going to say, like, it's, since we started doing it, it's surprising how much sugar you ingest without really thinking about it. Because, like, looking at certain things, you wouldn't think it's that bad, and then you realize just how much sugar you get. And I do think...
Yeah, so you're not doing keto, but it's still good because you're drastically reducing your carb intake.
Yeah.
Sure.
And like the science behind it is one thing, like pushing your body into ketosis, like that's one thing. But what I can say is that the few, not, it's not few times, the several times that we've broke keto, I will feel afterwards the effects of the sugar. So Canadian Thanksgiving was one of them. Both of our birthdays, we broke keto. And afterwards, like the next day, I'll just feel very lethargic and gross. The very first time we broke keto was after 3 weeks of being pretty good about it. And that day I was super irritable. And like other positive effects of this are like weight loss and sharpness of mind and clarity of thinking and stuff like that. I can't attest too much to those parts of being on the keto diet, but just like general mood and alertness, I do think I feel those things when I, only when I break it. I can't say that like when I'm on it, that on day to day I feel great, but I can see the contrast when I slip back. So by default, I'll extend those results and say that it's because of keto.
This is a ringing endorsement. It's like, I don't feel any better, but sometimes I feel much worse.
But those sometimes are directly tied to when I break keto. So science. Yeah.
Should you think Bea should do it?
I think it's your own keto choice. If you want to,
I think he shouldn't do it.
It's definitely hard. Like,
yeah, not because it's hard, but Bea, you're really scrawny. You're like, you can't lose any more weight, Bea.
It's
keto is not the right thing. You need to like bulk up and become huge.
Well, because you don't eat sugar and carbs, like, so much of your energy has to come from fat. I think, like, 60% or something of your intake is supposed to be fat, and then, like, 30% is...
You just have to eat a lot of...
Is protein.
Like, protein.
Yeah, so you could bulk up if you wanted to.
Yeah, but most of, like, most of... It's like intermittent fasting. Like, technically, you're not gonna eat less. Like, you can't just eat as much, but on different timings. But in reality, most of the time, you're just gonna skip breakfast.
Yeah. To each their own. Yeah. If you are interested in it, I would say, though, that you have to, like, go into it fully committed and try it out for at least 3 or 4 weeks. Because the first, like, week or two, it's going to be hard, and you're also not going to feel any of the effects, I don't think, because it's not long enough for your body to actually switch over biochemically to ketosis.
Yeah. If you want to do something for your health, stop smoking.
Oh, yeah. Stop smoking, Bea.
Mental health is health. You can't be happy.
True. All right.
All right.
Ready to wrap it.
That's it, guys.
What an episode. Full house. Yeah.
Full house.
Want to find out?
Full house,
if
baby.
If you want to find more about Reach and ESL Academy, enjoy. Hey people, this is Arian. Please enjoy this interview with James Lampkin, the Vice President of Product Development at ESL.
How are you doing today?
Very good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. So today I want to talk to you about ESL Academy. Can you just explain for the people listening really quickly what ESL Academy is?
Sure. So ESL Academy is a new product that ESL is launching to support Tier 2 Dota.
Mm-hmm.
We've actually been working on it for quite a while. We went into partnership with the people from DotaBuff. They're launching a new platform called Reach.gg, which is an online solo ladder subscription-based product. We've been talking with them for a while, trying to figure out how we could work together, and realize what made most sense was that they were launching this new platform and that we could, you know, marry our respective strengths together and figure out how that could fit in into the Dota 2 ecosystem. So basically how the system works is you play in solo queue on the Reach.gg system. Partway through the system, there's a lock in North America and European regions. We look at the top 40 players. And then in each of those two regions, two professional Dota 2 captains will draft teams of 5 from that top 40. Those four teams now get a month to train with the coach. They come offline to an ESL 1 event. They train in a DHL boot camp on site with that coach. They then play off their group stage between the four teams. And then we have the grand final on the ESL 1 main stage on the Sunday before the ESL 1 grand final.
You're actually going to have four teams.
We're going to have four teams.
North America only, or also South America?
Two from NA and two from EU
two from
to
NA
start.
Two from EU.
But
You're planning to expand.
Yeah, we're planning to expand, and some people have been asking me on Twitter, like, for example, are you going to allow CIS players to play in EU? And we've said yes, and we're also going to allow South American players to play in NA to start.
So when does this start?
So the platform has gone live now. It's in it's in beta.
So you just went with the announcement and it's instantly there.
Right. So it's a little bit, there will be a little bit of scaling. So the platform itself is in beta. Mm-hmm. So they're restricting access. You can go and sign up right now. There will be a little bit of a delay to get entry just so we're not flooding the system. And we're, because Reach.gg is brand new as well, they're trying to scale up their product based on the needs that we see from the community. So we're trying to get players onboarded as quickly as possible to start competing.
Okay, speaking of the players, who exactly are you targeting with this? Who exactly do you want to sign up with this? Are you only targeting, like, Immortal rank 100 players? Or even, like, I don't have to be, or is it, like, I don't have to be a top 1% player? Even if I'm, like, Divine 5, I could sign up and play.
Yeah, so, first of all, we want to create opportunity for everybody, and that's really what the Reach.gg system does. we're not looking for a specific top 100 player. What we wanted to do was really create a system that kind of already existed in Dota 2 at different periods. So, you know, I started out at ESL in 2013, worked on ESL 1 then, and would in the evenings go and watch matches on IXDL. I don't know if you remember that system. And there
I'm way too young to remember anything from 2013.
Okay, so there was a system called IXDL. It was run by IX Mike, the old Team Liquid player.
Oh yeah, I know that.
Right,
I interviewed him once.
So you would have players like Universe, Fear, PPD. They would be playing sort of pickup games, and then there would be 7 players in there who I thought were randoms. They were like 6K, 6.5K, but actually they were people like Zai that were in that system, and I just didn't know who they were. And the thing we noticed in Dota is those players exist still right now. I think a great example of that is Topson. So if you're really hardcore in Dota, you probably knew who Topson was before he went to OG.
I remember the Reddit post.
Right. But if you're just sort of a casual viewer, you just see this kid, 17, and boom, he's on OG, and now he's won TI. And so our goal with Academy was, how do we create a system that sort of funnels players, creates opportunity for them with weekly and monthly prize pools, and gives them opportunity to find, hey, the 1 to 2, 3 players that can really jump up to the pro level.
All right. You mentioned this like ranked ladder system.
Yep.
So if I'm probably never going to make it to the top 40 that get into the like draft pool where a captain drafts me, do you think that the system could still be just good for high MMR but not top echelon players?
Yeah.
To kind of just have a Faceit-esque system where you are able to compete against people you know.
Yeah, so we've intentionally designed the Academy product so that it's not just the rich get richer, right? So there's $240,000 in prize money. It's $20,000 per month given away in weekly cups. So you can participate in those weekly cups every single week and win money. And even if you don't get drafted into an Academy team, you can still be successful in that system. And we wanted to create it that way so that the waiting on the Academy final wasn't just, you know, the be-all and end-all. Yeah. Obviously, it's important if you really want to get your face on the main stage. But say you were somebody that was just competitive at home, was happy to play games and win some money, but didn't want to dedicate their whole life, you could still do that too.
Very cool. So you basically kind of learn from some perceived mistakes that Valve made, where you don't want to just have that one thing that everybody thing builds up to. You want to spread the prize pool out.
Yeah, I mean, in Dota, it's a very, very specific ecosystem.
It's very top-heavy.
It's a top-heavy ecosystem for sure, but we don't treat Dota the same way we treat Counter-Strike, right? So we didn't want to have the same solution that we took to Counter-Strike, and this is a system where, you know, even at the end of the Academy season, there is this team that wins, but we're not in control of that team. They don't belong to us. They could break up, right? And we want those players to be free and to then rotate back through the system. Maybe some is going to get onto a pro team, some go back into the Academy or Reach.
It seems like it's obvious that you don't want to just create a ranked ladder like Faceit. You want to create a whole ecosystem for...
Yeah, so we want to serve the whole ecosystem, and we call it our zero to hero strategy. Mm-hmm. So how do we take somebody who gets on and says, I want to be a competitive pro gamer? How do we show them the clear path that this is how you can make it? And so for us, Academy is this key piece where the story is, you know, you're in your room, you're playing these games, you're grinding away matches, but now there's a clear path where you can go, hey, if I hit these specific targets, I can actually be on the main stage this season, 2 months from now, in front of not only all the fans, but for us, what's really important is being in front of all those players and coaches, because we think that's where the attention is really going to be.
So where did the idea come from? Where, whoever had the idea, I don't know, maybe it was you. You had the idea. Very cool. What gave you the idea? Like, I am going to make, like, why do you think the tier 2, I mean, it's obvious to everybody in the Dota community that the tier 2 scene was dying and needs something like this.
Yeah.
But why do you think you as ESL are uniquely positioned to actually pull this off? Because I'd imagine it's not going to be profitable in this first place.
So we had the idea for this in February of last year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's taken us a long time to get to this point. And it's actually specifically because of that reason, is because how do you create a business and a product that doesn't just lose you money dumping money into tier 2? And so by constructing the system this way, the way I explain it to people is, if you think of that music show, The Voice, you've maybe seen that. They have four music coaches. This is sort of an entertainment show. And then if you look at something like IEM Katowice, very hardcore pro-level championship, for me, Academy sits somewhere in the middle, right? So I imagine NA versus EU classic rivalries between some of these old coaches that used to play together and creating... Yeah, this is really important for the players, but there's also unique and interesting things we can do there. For example, you know, since that team is probably going to disband at the end of the season, there's a little bit less sensitivity on, are they listening into my team comms, to my strat?
Yeah.
Instead, it's the reverse, right? It's, hey, we want to hear how these players communicate with each other. Is this guy just a 6.5K pub who can't communicate? Is this guy a screamer? These are important details for the Academy viewing product. So once you've created this, you realize, oh, we got something unique. It's not just tier two Dota, right? We're actually trying to do something, which is create an entertainment product that also identifies people who are sort of at that cusp of going pro.
Yeah. So you're, even though like it might not be 100% profitable, you're basically playing the long game. You're banking on the value that this is going to create as it goes on and as storylines build and as more people notice this.
Yeah, I mean, look, we're a company. We have a parent company, obviously. Yeah. I mean, profitability is very important for us, and we've structured it in a way, and we work with really great partners like DHL, who's going to be the one of the presenting partners, been really supportive of this. For us, it's important not focusing specifically on profitability, but sustainability.
Yeah.
Right? If you've just got a project that loses money and you don't know why you're doing it, it doesn't make sense.
It's not going to lose money forever.
Right, exactly. And so for us, the Academy is sort of a key piece in this system where we look at zero to hero, starting out in the open system, going up into Challenger, and then eventually getting up into ESL 1 tier events. So it supports this whole ecosystem for us.
All right, last question. It's a kind of a hard one. What do you need to achieve? And at what point do you say, all right, this is what I wanted? You might not necessarily stop. You might still want to go bigger.
Sure.
But at what point, like, what needs to happen? What, like, what success does this have to achieve where you're personally at a point where you're like, yeah, this is what I want?
Well, for me personally, it's really about feedback from the community and specifically the players, right? I mean, obviously, like you had said before, we've been listening to those conversations. I heard the video podcast with people like Nahaz talking about how Tier 2 was really dying and how it really needed this boost. And I knew in the back of my head, hey, I think we got a good solution for this. It's still a brand new product. We're still quite flexible. And so we're going to be playing with different rules in that. And we're starting out with two regions, NA and EU, but obviously we would love to see an SEA region, right? We would love to see more regions added into the system and bringing in the whole world to it. And that's really sort of a product of, can we make the platform, can we make the product successful overall? So it's going to be a bit of a back and forth with the community, getting their feedback, seeing how interesting the product actually is to watch for them. And I think that'll sort of determine the course of the future of the product.
One last thing. You mentioned you play Dota yourself.
Yeah, I mean, I'm old and retired. I play Dota.
I'm old and retired.
Yeah,
you don't really play. You still play some games.
I'm still playing. I'm still playing Dota, but these days it's sort of Dota Imba and, you know, casual games. When you work in esports all day, at the end of the day, you're like, do I want to do more competitive hardcore gaming or kind of relax?
That's valid too. Most people in our community are very casual about the game.
Yeah.
So I think that's very valid. All right. Thank you for the interview.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a nice day.
Thank
Bye.
You.